I don't know if this is the right time, but I'd like to publicly express my appreciation for the devotees that coordinated things. They're in the background, and you may not see them, but life is easy because they're doing lots of things. There's a group of devotees that have been here for a week, just making things nice and clean, and the boga in the kitchen, and a lot of backup. So there's a lot of devotees, but heading the team, Rasika Manjari and Preeti Menon and Shamasaki and a handful of other devotees. And very quietly sitting in the back here is Nandakishore, who got the plumbing working. And, you know, if that kind of stuff wasn't working, you'd be unhappy campers. So he's making us happy campers. Thank you very much for your coming all the way from Florida. He drove from Florida so he could serve you all. And if it doesn't work, blame him. But if it does work, give him credit. So, and one of the reasons for mentioning that also is, at the end of what I'm going to be speaking about this evening, I'll make mention of two Back to Godhead articles that for those of you that registered, if you didn't register, please register. Those of you that registered and gave your email address will send you two PDF files that are connected to this subject. Back to Godhead articles. You'll hear a little bit more about it. So if you didn't register, if you did register and didn't give your email address, please do so, so we can send these to you. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tavat etat mabhur atma. Manina trutyanehasa. Purvad abdham kridantam. Dadrishe sakalam harim. Tavad etat. Tavad etyatma bhur atma. Manina trutyanehasa. Purovad abdham kridantam. Dadrishe sakalam harim. Tavat. For so long. Itya. After returning. Atmabho. Lord Brahma. Atmamanena. By his own measurement. Truti anehasa. By a moment's time. Puravat. Just as previously. Abdam. For 1 year. By human measurement of time. Kridantam. Playing. Dadrishe, he saw sakalam, along with his expansions. Harim, Lord Hari, Sri Krishna. Translation. And when I read the translation, picture in your mind Srila Prabhupada in his final days. You've seen pictures, either photos or video footage of Prabhupada, his body totally emaciated, and his Krishna consciousness as sharp as a razor, think of the physical condition, the transcendental communication that Prabhupada was providing in that condition. Who knows what our condition will be like when were we to be in that position? His Krishna consciousness was fully transcendental. Translation, when Lord Brahma returned, after a moment of time had passed, parentheses, according to his own measurement, he saw that although by human measurement a complete year had passed, Lord Krishna, after all that time, was engaged just as before in playing with the boys and calves, who were his expansions. Purport, by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma had gone away for only a moment of his time, but when he returned, a year of human time had passed. On different planets, the calculation of time is different. To give an example, a man-made satellite may orbit the Earth in an hour and 25 minutes and thus complete one full day. Although a day ordinarily takes 24 hours for those living on Earth, therefore, what was but a moment for Brahma was 1 year on Earth. Krishna continued to expand himself in so many forms for 1 year. But by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, no one could understand this but Balaram. Paragraph. After 1 moment of Brahma's calculation, Brahma came back to see the fun caused by his stealing the boys and the calves, but he was also afraid that he was playing with fire. Krishna was his master, and he had played mischief for fun by taking away Krishna's calves and boys. He was really anxious, so he did not stay away very long. He came back after a moment, parentheses, of his calculation. When Brahma returned, he saw that all the boys, calves, and cows were playing with Krishna in the same way as when he had come upon them. By Krishna's display of Yoga Maya, the same pastimes were going on without any change. Last paragraph. On the day when Lord Brahma had first come, Baladev could not go with Krishna and the cowherd boys, for it was his birthday. And his mother had kept him back for the proper ceremonial bath called Snatika Snana. Therefore, Lord Baladev was not taken by Brahma at that time. Now, 1 year later, Brahma returned, and because he returned on exactly the same day, Baladev was again kept home for his birthday. So when we observe Balaram's appearance day, we can remember this nice pastime too. Therefore, although this verse mentions that Brahma saw Krishna and all the cowherd boys, Baladev was not mentioned, it was 5 or 6 days earlier that Baladev had inquired from Krishna about the extraordinary affection of the cows and cowherd men. But now, when Brahma returned, Brahma saw all the calves and cowherd boys playing with Krishna as expansions of Krishna, but he did not see Baladev. As in the previous year, Lord Baladev did not go to the woods on the day Lord Brahma appeared there. So go back to text 35. This is 34. So at 35, a whole year. Of course, this is Yoga Maya acting. And Yoga Maya acts on Balaram. And Yoga Maya sometimes acts on Krishna also. According to Krishna's desire, Yoga Maya can act on him and bewilder him. There's examples of this in Srimad Bhagavatam. So Balaram, by Yogamaya's arrangement, didn't know that during this 1 year, all the cowherd boys were Krishna, looking just like the cowherd boys. And all the calves were Krishna, looking just like the calves. So much so the mothers didn't know, so much so the cows didn't know, even Balaram didn't know. But then he started, Yogamaya was lifting a little bit, and he started noticing the affection that all the mothers have and all the fathers have for their boys is just like they have for Krishna, which is very unique. Mothers and fathers may have affection for other children, but where affection for other children surpasses the affection of their own children, that only happens with Krishna. But now their affection for their own children was equal to their affection for Krishna, and they were surprised. And the cows had affection for their calves like they had for Krishna. They had parental affection. Although they had neutral as cows, they actually, because they're cows, they had parental, and the bulls had paternal affection. So Krishna was reciprocating for this whole year. So text 35, Balaram is starting to see what's going on. Because of an increase of affection, the cows had constant attachment, even to those calves that were grown up and had stopped sucking milk from their mothers. When Baladev saw this attachment, he was unable to understand the reason for it. He used his reasoning faculty. Didn't work. And thus he began to consider as follows. What is this wonderful phenomenon? The affection of all the inhabitants of Braja, including me, towards these boys and calves is increasing as never before, just as our affection for Lord Krishna, the Supersoul of all living entities. Who is this mystic power? And where has she come from? Is she a demigod? Or a demoness? She must be the illusory energy of my master, Lord Krishna. For who else can bewilder me? Thinking in this way, Lord Balaram was able to see with the eye of transcendental knowledge that all these calves and Krishna's friends were expansions of the form of Sri Krishna. Lord Baladev said to Krishna, O Supreme Controller, these boys are not great demigods, as I previously thought, nor are these calves great sages like Narada. Now I can see you alone are manifesting yourself in all varieties of difference. Although one, you are existing in the different forms of the calves and boys. Please, briefly, explain this to me. Unquote. Having thus been requested by Lord Baladev, Krishna explained the whole situation, and Baladev understood it. And then comes text 40. So the topic is eternal time and relative time. Because our topic is time and using time in Krishna's service. And certainly in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan, there is a sense of time, although there's no time. That sense of time is Yogamaya, because Yogamaya is facilitating Krishna's pastimes. And so, just like it says in Bhagavad Gita, there is a place where there is no need of sunlight or moonlight or electricity, because everything there is self-luminous. Here we have a sun and a moon and electricity, because it's not self-luminous. It's the opposite. Without electricity or sunlight or moonlight, it's darkness. But in the spiritual world, there's no... it's self-luminous. But they still have day and night. And there's no need of sunlight or moonlight, but there's a full moon night. In fact, our acharyas say every night is a full moon night. There's no phases of the moon, because there's phases of the moon here because of relative time. One fortnight is 15 days. We discussed that chart, remember the first day? So that's now in this relative time where there's past, present, and future, and in the spiritual world there's ever-presence, or Rabindra in his article on conceiving the inconceivable calls it the now moment of eternity. Sounds cool, right? The now moment of eternity. That's not so cool. That's nirvana. That's nothingness. When I was still in the stage of scratching my head and pulling my chin and trying to sort out all the different things in the spiritual marketplace during my college days, there was a famous book, well, not famous book, a well-known book amongst spiritual seekers, Be Here Now. Maybe it's an impersonalist, without going into the person and his teaching. Buddhism has a similar idea of be in the moment. And we also can say the same thing. You know, one mantra at a time, same idea. It comes from the same idea because you be present with Krishna. Now, not like worry about, will I in the future ever get to be with Krishna, or in the past I did so many stupid things. This, that the opportunity to be with Krishna is in the moment. And be so when we have kirtan, when we finish and we have kirtan, you lose sense of time and it just becomes the mantra. Than just being absorbed in the sound of Krishna's name. And we're lifted through sound vibration, if there's attentive hearing, to the sound of Krishna's name. And that's what fills your consciousness. And that's approaching the realm of eternity, or the eternal pastimes of singing the glories of Krishna and pastimes of Krishna and so forth through glorification of Krishna. But here is the realm of relative time. We discussed in the first day the time energy acting in four different ways to bring about creation, in different stages of creation, and then to withdraw creation. That's all done by the time energy of Vishnu. Mahavishnu does, Garbhodakshay Vishnu does, Shirodakshay Vishnu does, and then time energy is withdrawn. And it goes back into this susupti state, where there's no sense of time. And then the time energy is released, and then again creation. And so while that... There's a phase during the process of creation where the time energy has been injected by the glance of Mahavishnu, and then the elements separate. And then the seeds of the universes expand into the Mahatattva from the body of Mahavishnu, and the elements congeal or somehow place themselves around these seeds, so that the universes start to enlarge, but the elements are not yet in a cooperative state so that they can do what universes do, if you remember this. So an expansion of Shirodakshayi Vishnu enters within each element along with the time energy so that they can then cooperate. But it's described in Brahma Samhita For 1,000 years, these universes, celestial years, not our years, they're just like Prabhupada's phrase, is they're floating on an ocean. Footballs, unlimited numbers of footballs floating on the ocean. And Mahavishnu is enjoying his eternal pastimes with his internal potency, Rama, and commentary by acharyas on those verses. This is now from Bhagavatam. Say, Vishnu just wanted to demonstrate he really doesn't have anything to do with this material energy. He's eternally, so even while the creation is going on, he's eternally engaging in his pastimes with Rama. Krishna is eternally engaging in his pastime with Radha and Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan. And this other is simultaneously going on, you say, like remote control. And then after 1,000 of those years, celestial years, he enters as Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And then again, by time energy, the karma of the living entities become activated. And Brahma, then the rest of the sub-creation comes. So there's this relative time, and we discussed that there's, according to the guna and karma, according to the desire and the deserve of the living entity, they're placed differently within the creation. So Brahma has to know, can you imagine this? He has to know the desires of every living entity and provide them a suitable life form to match their desires and their deserve. And what a database he must have. How many gigabytes of database does Lord Brahma have? How, you can't even think. One of my god sisters once asked Srila Prabhupada, when chanting Hare Krishna, Prabhupada, should be thinking about how chanting is beneficial for all living entities? And Prabhupada's reply was, you can't even think of all living entities. So don't try, just think of the holy name. So we can't even think of what, but Brahma can only can think of all living entities. He knows in detail exactly not only what their desire and deserve is, but how to produce what they desire and deserve. The intelligence of Brahma. It's inconceivable. And he also has to die. There's a nice description just on the relative time, found in the ninth canto of one of the kings in the lunar dynasty, Kukudmi, who had such a qualified daughter that he felt, my qualified daughter deserves the best of husbands. And the person who for sure can guarantee the best of husbands for my daughter is Lord Brahma. So he was such a powerful king, he was able to go to the abode of Lord Brahma. But when he got to the abode of Lord Brahma, he was busy. He was attending a Gandharva recital. So he was told, just wait for a while. When Lord Brahma is done, he'll come to receive you, or you can come before him. So he waited some while, and then he came before Lord Brahma and introduced his daughter, Revati, and made his request. And Lord Brahma just laughed. He said, 27 yuga cycles have passed during this time that you've been waiting for the Gandharva recital to be finished. Not just, you know, another generation. 27 yuga cycles, and that's 160 million years. Then he laughed again. He said, but I have a nice solution. Baladev, he would be a suitable husband, and by the time you make it back, you can tell him Brahma sent you. he improves that Revati can marry you, Balaram. Or another place, this is Sunday night, so we're just telling stories of relative time. The travel of Arjuna and Krishna to go to the abode of Mahavishnu. It comes toward the very end of the 10th canto. It's chapter 89. It's almost, I think there's just 90 chapters in the 10th canto. So, if you're not familiar with the story, in Dwaraka, there was one Brahmana who, child after child, just after the child was born, not that the child died, but the child just vanished. And he was startled. Well, you can imagine. Your child's not, you know, like kidnapped or, you know, just vanished. And then a number of children, I forget the number, 9 children, something like that. And child after child after child after child after child. And finally, the Brahmana started speaking badly about Ugrasena and Krishna. What kind of king is this? A Brahmana, faultless Brahmana, isn't even protected by the king. Child after child is being, whatever, kidnapped or just disappears. And he began speaking openly to anyone and everyone about the disqualification of Ugrasena and Krishna. Arjuna happened to be visiting at the time and he heard this conversation. So he went to the Brahmana and in a Kshatriya spirit said, I will protect you. I don't know what it is that is causing this, but I will take a vow. You tell me, you go ahead and conceive another child, and before the child is born, I will personally come and give protection. And if I fail to give protection, then I will give up my life to protect the honor of Krishna. So sure enough, the child was to be born. Arjuna came with his arrows. He created a house that could not be penetrated by the arrows of Arjuna, by his own mystical arrows. And sure enough, as soon as the child was born, the child disappeared. Oh, that Arjuna couldn't believe it. And he searched everywhere and asked everyone, and the child couldn't be found. So he had taken a vow, so he built a fire. He was going to enter into the fire and give up his life. And Krishna stopped him. Said, Arjuna, don't do this. I know where the child is. Let's go. Get my chariot. Dwaraka, get my chariot. And off they went. But it's a very special chariot. They could travel through space. And it describes the traveling through the lower planet, middle planetary systems, upper planetary systems, beyond Brahmaloka, into the layers of the universe, beyond the layers of the universe, into the spiritual sky, which was so dazzling bright, they had to close their eyes, and eventually they reached the abode of Mahavishnu. Normally we hear Mahavishnu is reclining on the causal ocean, right? And the causal ocean is on this side of the spiritual sky. And so the spiritual sky is on the other side, and on this side of the ocean, this shore, is the material energy. Anyway, they entered this brilliant light, and then they came to the abode of Mahavishnu. And instead of lying on the causal ocean, he was in a palace, because he can expand himself and do whatever he likes. He's very powerful. So when they came to the abode of Mahavishnu, Mahavishnu smiled and said, I knew you would come. It was I who stole the children of the Brahmana, knowing that you would rescue the children of the Brahmana, and this way I can get to see you, because otherwise I don't get to see you. I have this service to do to create the universe and support the universe. So he came before Krishna, and Arjuna came before Mahavishnu. And that's in the spiritual sky. Then he brought the children back and the Brahman was happy and everything was nice. Or going in the other direction, where after Devaki at one point requested, very shyly, she requested, Krishna, I hear that you have these special abilities to bring people back from the dead. And my six sons, is it something you think that you can do for me? I'd never had the chance to be with my six children. So Krishna went to retrieve the sons of Devaki. And they went to the opposite direction, to the abode of Yamaraj. He brought them before Devaki. Now, so in each of these going here and going there, there's time that passes, but the experience of time that passes, it works one way for Krishna and it works one way for the rest of us. And even the rest of us, it works differently for different persons who are differently situated. And the time, one way of picturing how time works, let's start with, besides the lower planets, well, we'll go to the lower planets. What happens, we say, people ask us this question, when the soul leaves the body, how long before the soul enters into the next body? What's the answer, brahmacharis? How quickly does it happen? When the soul leaves the body, going to the next body, how quickly does it happen? Next moment. Instantly. No passage of time, right? Instantly. Confirmed? Yes. Okay. Because we know this from Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada writes, that a coma is when the body is no longer fit for habitation, but where the next body is going to be is undetermined. And so it's like limbo. You're neither here nor there. And sometimes people come back from coma because there's not an appropriate body yet suited for this soul. So supposing it's a downward position, what happens is, it's not just one goes to the lower life form. If one is sinful, one goes to the bad place. One goes before the court of Yamaraj and experiences a penalty or a sentence of suffering in hell for a long period of time, so much period of time that one Prabhupada describes like this, the soul is just begging, let me out of here. I'll take anybody. A body of a worm, a body of a bird, a body of a dog. Let me get out of here. And boom. And how long does that take? Less than a moment. Although it is experienced like a whole lifetime. Like a whole lot of time. Long, long, long time. Because down here it's a long time. And here it's less than a moment. Just like in this verse, you see this word, truti? Manena truti? Remember truti from the first day? That's the time that it takes to bring three hex atoms or 18 atoms together. And it's 8/135,000th of a second. That's a small amount of time. So the simple translation is, in a moment of Brahma's time, less than a second, a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction. And lava matra sadhusanga, that's a whole bunch of trutis. You need a little bit more than a truti for association of a devotee. You need a lava. Lava matra sadhusanga sarva siddhikoi. But it's still less than a second. And then we heard that the life of Brahma is one nimesha of the personality of Godhead. It's like, you know, a breath. Next Brahma. Okay, next Brahma. And his life is 311 trillion 40 billion earthly years. So it's, you know, the pyramid base is really big at the bottom, and it becomes less and less. But even like this, you know, one moment here on Earth planet compared to hellish planets, that's one pyramid. Then there's the Earth planet going up to the upper planets. And the one moment of Brahma is one full year here. Or one moment, one truti is one full year. So it goes up and up and up and up and up and up and up. And, you know, where time, the duration of Brahma's life, it's a big, really big number. 4,320,000,000 times 2 times 1,000. It's a lot of zeros. It's a lot of time. But for the Lord, it's but a fraction of a moment. And then in this nice article by Ravindra, that what's at the very top of the pyramid? It's the now moment of eternity. But that's the be here now moment. It's the aspiration of the impersonalist or the nirvana stage. Remember I was yesterday described this idea of happiness for Buddhism is to attain the state of perpetual bliss. But then you learn from Buddha there how to enter into nothingness. That's this nirvana state, where there's no time. The now moment of eternity. But then there's this other inverted pyramid, where time just is endless. And the variety of pastimes with Krishna, the eternal pastimes of Krishna, are going on. Where there's no past, present, and future, but there's a sense of activity that's eternal activity. And even just the concept of eternal activity is inconceivable, because what's conceivable to us is activity that's past, present, and future. We can't think the thought. It's inconceivable. Timeless activity. Eternal activity. It's also it's a inconceivable thought to think of happiness that knows no limit. We can't think the thought. Our frame of reference is the other, where it's temporary and then it's gone, and even the temporary is not what real happiness is. So, in that eternal realm, time is very flexible. Krishna engages his internal potency, part of which, an aspect of which, is eternal time, however he likes. We'll give some examples. Those of you that have been to Vrindavan, you know that very near the Krishna Balaram temple is the Kaliyagat, the place where Krishna entered into the Kaliya lake and danced on the hoods of the Kaliya serpent. And he jumped into the lake from the Kadamba tree that's right there at that ghat. So it's right there. And that pastime took place very, very early in the morning. And it went all day long. And to get from where Nandagram is, you know, if you had a Tata Sumo, it may take you like 2.5 hours. Krishna doesn't have a Tata Sumo. His pastimes would be very different. But the cowherd boys got there when it was just the break of the day. And they didn't have a Tata Sumo. So how'd they get from there to there? And then during the Leela, Krishna's in the coils of the Kaliya serpent. And when Brahmana went back all the way to Nandagram to tell Nanda, the danger that Krishna's in, and all the residents from Nandagram came to the Kaliya Ghat. How did all that happen when such a distance had to be covered? If you had to walk, I don't know how to estimate how long it would take, but it would probably take all day to walk from one place to the other. and then back again, and then back again, and then back again. That's 4 days. So how did it work? So Prabhupada's explanation is, by Krishna's arrangement, the lotus of Vrindavan can open and close, and that way distances can become shorter or longer. But it's also the time energy. Krishna can move the time energy however he likes, because it's an aspect of his yogamaya potency. Just like the material energy is an expansion, an immaterial expansion of Ramadevi, who has so many potencies at her disposal for the internal potency service, the pleasure potency and internal potency of Mahavishnu. So Yogamaya, being the internal potency, also has all these potencies, and time can act in eternal time, in the endless pastimes of Krishna, however Krishna likes. Another very nice example is Narada's visit to Dwarka, because he's qualified in this way. He can go wherever he likes as quickly as he likes. And so one time he wanted to go to Dwarka. And when he went to Dwarka, he was amazed at the opulence of Dwarka that superseded even the opulence of Vaikuntha. And the opulence of Vaikuntha is filled with Aishwarya. But he experienced opulence that surpassed the opulence of Vaikuntha. And not only the opulence, but the 16,000 palaces. Now, both time and space. How to do this? I forget the numbers. The dimension of Dwarka is said to be whatever it is. And then each of the palaces, 16,000 palaces of Krishna, is nearly as big as the size of Dwarka, and there's 16,000 of them. So how do they fit inside Dwarka? And then there's a description in the Srimad Bhagavatam of the number of bodyguards that Ugrasena had, because previously he had been imprisoned by Kamsa. So when he was then freed from the prison of Kamsa and made the king, he had so many bodyguards. And I can't remember the number of bodyguards. But the number of bodyguards exceeds the population of the world today. And they all lived in Dwarka. Nine quadrillion bodyguards. So some of you know who is Sataputta. He was a PhD mathematician from Cornell University. He did the math of how many times around the earth you line up, you know, bodyguards, and it goes around like 6 or 7 times around the circumference of the earth. 9 quadrillion. And they all fit inside Dwarka. Mythology, right? Mythology. It's the unlimitedness of the spiritual world, both in terms of space and in terms of time. So when Narada entered into Dwarka, not only there's these palaces that fit into the dimension of Dwarka, 16,000, and it wasn't just palaces, there's roads, there's parks, and there's other people that lived in Dwarka besides Krishna and his queens and his palaces, and it all fit inside Dwarka. But the time energy, when he went from palace to palace, he saw simultaneously in one palace it was night. In another palace, Krishna was just getting up in the morning. Another palace, Krishna, it was midday and he was having his lunch. Simultaneously. Time is very flexible. For Krishna's pastimes, time is very flexible. He can use time however he likes. Just as he did with Lord Brahma. For one full year of earth pastime, he's engaging in his eternal pastimes. It's an eternal pastime. with his associates, the cows with their calves, and the mothers and fathers with their children, being the son or the child of, or the baby calf of. It's an eternal pastime, although it takes the span of 1 year. It's an eternal pastime, and for Brahma, it's one truti. So there's relative time, and relative time is relative to, you know, one position and another position. You can, you know, this pyramid example. And then we can enter into the now moment of eternity, and we can go beyond neutrality into the eternal pastimes of Krishna. And by using time in Krishna's service, you qualify yourself to enter into those eternal pastimes of Krishna. Now, just to one last thing with Sri Brahma Samhita. You ready? A little technical, but it's nice. The pastimes of Krishna are eternal. And there's two types, manifest and not manifest. The manifest pastimes of Krishna are once in a day of Brahma. And then those are eternally going on in, you know, this is Goloka, and down here is Gokula. They're eternally going on in Goloka, but they're manifest here in Gokula once in a day of Brahma. So that's one type of Krishna's manifest pastimes. There's another kind that are also eternal, but they're unmanifest, because we can't see them. They're withdrawn from our vision, and then Krishna manifests them, and then he withdraws them, and then they're unmanifest, but they're eternal. And those that are qualified, Jiva Goswami writes in his commentary of Sri Brahma Samhita, even today there are a few who are very qualified to not only experience, but enter into those unmanifest pastimes. And he gives the methodology. Would you like to know how to do that? You have to be very qualified, but I'll tell you how to do it. There's two types. Mantra upasana is one type, and sva rasaki is another type. Now, this is a description of how to enter into Krishna's unmanifest pastimes and see them, and experience them, and participate in them today. Not wait for another day of Brahma, when the 27th yuga cycle and the 28th millennium of Vaivasvatamanu. Not today. So mantra upasana is, again, by sound vibration. And this is the method that Brahma used. Now, this is a little bit your question about Gayatri. There are mantras that Lord Brahma received, and of course, we mentioned a little bit, he's very qualified. His qualified was not just he had like a big gigabyte hard drive with a lot of data on it, but he had, his consciousness was very subtle and pure. So for 1,000 celestial years, he engaged in meditation upon a particular mantra called Gopal Mantra. And by entering into that mantra, this was a mantra upasana practice where he could see the pastime of Krishna described in that mantra. And Jiva Goswami compares that to a lake. And sometimes lakes are formed by a river coming in one side, a lake, and going out the other side. So once entering into the lake, one can then enter into the river. And from the river, this other second kind of experiencing the unmanifest eternal pastimes of Krishna, even the body may be in this temporal plane, like, you know, here and now, physical. But consciousness entering into the svarasiki stage, where one's relationship with Krishna is revived, and one not only sees the pastimes, one participates in the pastimes. And that's what Brahma did. And that's what the Govinda prayers represent, his realizations. And some of those, Jiva Goswami specifically says, they are mantras that are the type of this mantra upasana type. So that's eternal time being accessed from by spiritual qualification through sound vibration into eternal time. So, hey, we're not so qualified, right? So what should we do? We should engage in devotional service now, use our time carefully, hear the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, chant the holy name, engage in the objects that are created by temporal time in service of the master of eternal time, Krishna. At least cultivate like that, starting with the process of hearing and chanting and maximizing our time, like the discussion this morning, nivritti, minimizing entanglement in material energy, maximizing, in a realistic way, maximizing our time in the hearing and chanting activities, the direct activities of bhakti. And otherwise using things as our propensity dictates in service to Krishna. But making sure we have a nice quantity and quality of hearing and chanting. And if we so desire, the time energy will act to allow for that. It works. Despite, you know, the pressure of the things of this world that are demanding of our time. Spiritualize that and very strongly engage in the hearing and chanting activities. And in course of time, the qualification, the purification, and thus the qualification increases, and our capacity to enter into this the timeless pastimes of Krishna doesn't have to wait until after this body, if one is very qualified. At least the sense of moving towards timelessness. Like, and just a little practical example and I'll end. When you're at a japa retreat, or you're trying, some special opportunity, you're trying to increase your chanting on a given day, maybe, so let's just say you're at a japa retreat and you're trying to chant 64 rounds. What's it like time-wise when the chanting is crummy? It takes forever, right? And when your chanting is going very nicely, you don't even notice the time. It's gone. I mean, you have some sense that time is passing, but it's not really where your attention is going. It's just your attention is, when absorbed in Krishna, thought, and Krishna's name, and Krishna's pastimes, and Krishna's devotional service. When you're having fun, time flies. And when you're suffering, it drags. So have fun. Enter into the realm of timelessness. Primarily hearing and chanting and appreciating this all-merciful internal potency of devotional service. Maximize direct time and energy into that eternal activity of devotion to Krishna. And everything else shrinks. At least it shrinks in its significance and how it acts upon you and things like that. So I wanted to end a little bit early so we could start kirtan a little bit early and have a little longer kirtan tonight. So, any comments or questions? Yes.
Maybe I missed the point, but I wanted to know, am I correct if I say that when we are chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra, we are already in the unmanifested pastime, but because we are not qualified, we are not able to experience it?
That's not exactly what I said. It's not at all what I said, but it's close. It's when we're chanting Hare Krishna, the unmanifest pastimes is not related specifically to chanting Hare Krishna. It's a description of time. Eternal time is present even now. Is what you know. And the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan are eternal. Even now, when they're not visible to most of us, or all of us. But there are qualified persons who can see, experience, and enter into those pastimes even now, when there's qualification. So, Maha Mantra, the Hare Krishna Mantra, is the easily accessible means for anybody, everybody, to contact spiritual sound vibration, to contact Krishna. In our process, within ISKCON, within our Acharya's line, in addition to the Hare Krishna mantra, we have Gayatri mantra. And in those Gayatri mantras, they're specific, they're mantra upasana type mantras. At least it's what Brahma did as mantra upasana, and then he realized his spiritual identity. He realized his rasa, his spiritual form, in relation to Krishna, through this Gayatri mantra chanting. So, Hare Krishna mantra helps us qualify for chanting Gayatri mantra properly. And in one sense, Hare Krishna mantra is sufficient. But within our line, it qualifies us for additional Gayatri mantra. And one helps the other. And so, you know, one helps the other, and the other helps the one. But now back to the eternal pastimes of Krishna. But the point that I wanted to make is as I repeated, those pastimes of Krishna are indeed eternal. Sometimes they're manifest, and sometimes they're not manifest, but one can enter into the unmanifest pastimes if one is qualified. And the Hare Krishna mantra helps to qualify us. Is that... Address your question?
Yes.
Okay. Atmani Vedana.
Maharaj, you were speaking about how activities in the spiritual world are eternal and how that's inconceivable.
Can somebody that knows how to control the volume do that? Because it's a little too loud for this remote. Go, keep going.
Yeah.
Just hold it away as you're doing.
So activities are eternal. This is in the spiritual. This is inconceivable. Is that better?
Yeah, but there's also the position of the speakers and where you are. Just keep going.
So one way that I can understand, maybe this is mental speculation, one way that I could understand how that makes sense to me for Krishna's activities is, well, Krishna is unlimited, so he can do whatever he wants. Many activities at the same time.
No problem.
Okay, so then here would be my question. If that was an acceptable explanation as to Krishna's activities being
what
eternal.
About yourself?
Well, for the jiva soul, who is engaged in activities in the spiritual world, but he's not unlimited, but he does do more than one activity. So if his activities are eternal, then that explanation wouldn't seem to apply. Because he's not unlimited, so he is not unlimited, in other words, engaged in many activities simultaneously. So if his activities are eternal, how can you engage in multiple activities? So maybe this is inconceivable and I shouldn't even ask.
Well, both. we can speak about it, but it still remains inconceivable. Here's a few things. One is our acharyas are very explicit about Krishna investing the ability in his pure devotees to simultaneously be engaged in multiple things. It's not the same as Krishna expanding himself. It doesn't give the technology at all. It just says, the acharyas describe, and I'm sure there's scriptural reference that says it, Like, you know, Narada Muni can be in multiple places at the same time. And living entities can be in multiple places at the same time. By Krishna's arrangement. Now, it's not like they become multiple souls or something like that. It doesn't give the technology, but they can, by Krishna's arrangement, for his pleasure. Just like he can, you know, he can expand, however he does it, he does it. However he does it, he does it. But a second part, and more important, is eternal is not static. So to say the pastime is eternal, don't make the mistake of thinking of it as a time-bound eternal. Like, you know, I'm here, so I can't be in New York or in, you know, in Timbuktu. I can be here. I can't, so, and how can I be eternally here and eternally somewhere else and eternally, which is, seems to be what your question is. It's thinking of time in a linear sense, that, but how eternal time works is not like that. Like one of the ways that, that Prabhupada describes Krishna's eternal pastimes is like the rising of the sun. That makes it, like, that's one way of explaining that which is inconceivable. The sun is always rising. Just as on earth the sun is always rising, it's always, you know, sunrise somewhere. And then it's always sunset somewhere. The sun is always rising. Similarly, Krishna's appearance and each of his pastimes and each of his pastimes and each of his pastimes and each of his pastimes, they're somewhere taking place. They're eternal. And somebody's with him taking part in those pastimes. Giriraj Maharaj asked Prabhupada this question in a morning walk in Juhu about, you know, if very much like what you're saying, Krishna is taking part in the Kurukshetra battle with the Pandavas. And it takes 18 days. So in some universe, there's the beginning of the battle, the beginning of the battle, the beginning of the battle, the beginning of the battle. Until the Krishna's passage with the Pandavas is taking place somewhere. But, you know, there's here. Then, you know, is there another Arjuna along with Krishna? It's similar to what you're asking. And Prabhupada gave the answer that Krishna can make arrangements for the living entities to expand and take part in his pastimes with him. So the answer is yes, you can discuss it, and the answer is yes, it's quite inconceivable. Any other question? Okay.
Maharaj, you mentioned about Jiva Goswami mentioning about mantra upasana as means to enter
into the unmanifest pastimes of Krishna.
So, like, what I've seen in my practice of chanting is that any expectation that I have to get any spiritual experience, it becomes an obstacle for chanting.
Very good.
So, how is that relevant to, you know, people like practicing?
It's completely relevant. It's absolutely relevant. So, spiritual practice is not fruitive. Tendency is to take our spiritual, to take our fruitive tendency into the realm of devotional service. You know, to have expectations about what Burijan calls it as peak experiences. And it's a detriment. One shouldn't do that because it'll keep those very same experiences far away. It's a covering. It's not a devotional mood. So what is the devotional mood? Krishna, you're my master. And I'm your servant. Please engage me in your service. And it can be, as Lord Chaitanya said, you can embrace me, you can trample me, you can neglect me, you can do whatever you want. Just please engage me in your service. Causeless devotional service. That's the peak experience. And then Krishna does with you whatever he wants. And you're in his internal potency. You're not, you know, bringing a fruitive disposition of heart into the house of bhakti. You're asked to keep, you know, your shoes outside. Don't bring them in. They don't belong in. Okay? And it's hard to give that up. It's very strong. The conditioning is very strong. Something on the ladies' side? Up front here? Okay. Yes?
This is not really related, but
I'm used to it. Sorry? Go ahead.
Okay. No, I was just wondering, when we think of Krishna, also like deity-wise, all the features are very Indian. In the pastimes, everyone is very Indian.
Balaram is white. And the cows are very colorful. There's many different colors of cows, and the cowherd boys, they're also many different colors. It's very colorful. It's rainbow. Go ahead.
I mean, I was thinking more like when people of not Indian background, when they ask, like, you know, why is your God, like, I mean, I understand, you know, you worship him because, you know, you're Indian, you could do that, but you know, why, like, if I'm Chinese, why doesn't he have like Chinese eyes, or like, you know what I mean? Or if he's, like, how do I answer that? I wasn't sure. I felt like, is God, like, he's not partial, but.
Okay. I'm curious if Chinese artists paint Krishna's eyes like their eyes. Well, it's another way of asking. It's a different question, but it's close to the same question. Is why all these appearance places are in India? Why not, you know, some other place? At least one other place. I mean, come on. So it sounds like an Indian, you know, doctrine, like you just made it up and something like that. Krishna appears in India because it's the land of piety. The way the Prabhupada describes it is all over the world. Since the ancient times, India has been known as a place of religion. He would quote some very famous Chinese, I don't know who he's quoting, Chinese professor, philosopher that said, if you really want to know about religion, you have to find out about the religion of India, because that's where real religion is. So Krishna's attracted there not because, oh, this is Indian, so, and I'm Indian, so I'll appear there. I won't appear in China because they have funny eyes. And so it's where there's the culture of India has grown to be like the culture of the spiritual world, you could say, because of its closeness to Krishna. Not the other way around. And look at us. We're not Indian. I'm not Indian. A number of us, the external doesn't make us spiritual, but we adopt this attire because it reminds us of Krishna. That's my understanding of why I, you know, initially I was like stubborn about, you know, I'm going to live in the temple, but I'm not going to shave my head, I'm not going to wear a dhoti, I'm not going to put on tilak. I'm just going to be Krishna conscious in the temple. And I was surprised. Nobody bugged me about it. They just like let me, you know. And then I got over being stubborn and started thinking, well, you know, why do they do it anyways? And why should I do it? And the answer was, if it helps me remember Krishna, and if I can help others remember Krishna, then I should do that. So it helps us remember Krishna by dressing this. Not we imagine Krishna to be like us, or Indian, if you're from India. It's the other way. Okay? In the front here, there are two hands. Can you take the microphone and turn it on for her? Okay. Okay. Good.
Okay. We have our body is gross, so we can be present at one place at one time.
Right.
But our thoughts, our dreams, and those things are not gross. I mean, the gross body kind of thing. So I can be present at the same time being here. I can be present with my children. I can be present with my mother's thoughts. I'm thinking about the spiritual body, how that will be different, because then you are in your past as well as in your future at the same time, you know, if you think about that.
Well, that's make sure we're not thinking of the mind as being the same as the soul.
No.
So, but some description, you can be in the thoughts of someone, or someone can be in your thoughts, and you can be with them in terms of the mind. But then the soul is different than the mind. So we can be with Krishna, even the body is, you know, in the physical realm. And we can make the physical realm none different than the spiritual realm by devotional service. You know, Prabhupada's statement, this temple is not in New York, it is in Vaikuntha, or this temple is not in Los Angeles, it's in Vaikuntha. But this is Vaikuntha. Because Vaikuntha means where everything is in relation to the personality of Godhead, everything is in relation to Krishna. That's Vaikuntha. So the place becomes, and one's consciousness is with Krishna. So, but I don't know if that's addressing your question. Does that address your question? Not exactly. So, articulate your question clearly so I can address it.
I think it does explain that, but still I'm thinking, what's the difference between gross body and spiritual body, and, you know, being...
It's a world of difference, like night and day.
Yeah, and then some things which we think associate with the gross body, thinking that we can be only here and not elsewhere. If you think in terms of spiritual body, that's what Krishna has.
But it's not Krishna doesn't have a spiritual body. It sounds like us, where we have the soul and we have a body, and our thinking towards Krishna has to change. It's not like Krishna. There's no inside and outside with Krishna. His body is Him. His name is He's absolute, all absolute. So I don't know how to... I'm not really clear what your question is. I'm having a hard time responding. Maybe you can think about it some more and ask me offline, because time is ticking.
You spoke about the now moment of eternity and being here now.
Yeah.
And you also said that impersonalists have the same idea. And I'm sorry I missed that class. So I'm wondering, you know, while we're chanting japa, we are also, you know, one mantra at a time.
But that's different. It's different because it's be in the moment with Krishna. So it's entering into an eternal, or reviving an eternal relationship with Krishna. It's like a seed that's being nurtured. It's not just the state of neutrality, of nothingness. Nothing material, and without a conception of spiritual variegatedness, it's nothingness. That's Buddhism. Literally, nothingness. That's their goal. Imagine? That's their goal. And the reason is, as far as they're concerned, that's truth, that's reality. This is illusion, and reality is nothingness. So they want to go to reality of nothingness. and they pass through the land of bliss where they get trained up in nothingness. But that's this, so where relative time is less and less and less and less and less, and then it's nothing, the now moment. So that's an entry point for us. The whole of the spiritual experience is eternal time. So there's no past, no future. It's eternal present with Krishna. That's the difference. So it starts with the name. So when we end, we'll have kirtan, and you can apply that principle and invite you all to apply the principle. Same. Just hear the sound of the name. And you'll be transported not to nothingness, but, you know, we'll say somethingness. Spiritual reality. It's the spiritual realm of Krishna. Contact, direct contact with Krishna through sound vibration. You have something? Okay. We have 4 minutes. Any final question? Roger.
Yeah, Maharaj, this is in relevance to the overall theme of time management.
Okay. Yeah,
and Nityananda Prana Prabhu today made some presentation where Prahlad Maharaj shows that the average age of a living entity being 100 years,
yeah,
you know, then 50
don't
years.
Count
is,
on it.
Yeah, 50 years is gone in sleeping, and
yes,
then 20 plus 10.
That's a lot of sleep too.
Yeah, that only 10 years. So effectively, just 10 years of life left
yeah.
around there. So that kind of really creates a sense of urgency. So
yeah.
Shifting the same point in terms of coaching somebody who's having just 10 years of time to do devotional service. So it's so important to be trained in a very detailed manner, guided. Otherwise, it's just a probability of
okay,
that.
So you're sharing some appreciation for using our time in devotional service carefully. It's okay. Okay, let's do some of that in the form of kirtan right now. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.